You are beautiful, powerful, and strong. You are beautiful, powerful, and strong. You're beautiful, you're powerful, you're strong. You are beautiful, powerful, and strong. I've been singing that song to my eldest daughter, Mira, since she was 3 months old. I made it up in response to an article that my wife Elizabeth read that referenced research that shows that little girls, by the time they're two, have heard something like 90% of their compliments as referencing their looks, about being beautiful or pretty or cute. And that little boys by the same age have heard over and over how powerful and strong they are. These gender norms are created by our culture and are already being ingrained in our littlest ones before they can even talk. I was determined that I was not going to let this happen to Mira. I sang to her regularly and still do. You are beautiful, powerful, and strong. The stories we tell, the stories our culture tells, they are powerful. They shape who we are and how we think about ourselves. And far too often, these stories are harmful. Ridiculous, false gender norms about women have reinforced sexism in our culture and our country for decades, even centuries. And even when we know better in our heads, even when we know better intellectually, those cultural messages can be difficult to overcome. And if the cultural messages aren't enough, then there's also the stories that our families tell us. I've shared before the experience of a coworker, Tom, whose family told him his whole life that he was impatient. So that was the story he told himself as a kid. It was a story he told himself and acted out as an adult. So most of his early adulthood, he didn't even try to work on being patient, since he just figured it was who he was. He continued to act impatiently until he had children in his 30s and decided it was important to him to be patient with them. Lo and behold, he discovered that he could be patient when he wanted to be. By the time he was sharing this story with me, his children were teenagers, and he had made enough progress that the impatience was their story, not his story. But it took a long time and a lot of hard work on his part to change the internal narrative. Just yesterday, I was at the playground with my two little ones, and I overheard a mother yelling at her little daughter, who could have been at most 2 years old, but probably was closer to one. She was yelling, "Put your shirt down. I don't want to see those boobies. Put it down." It hurt me to hear that, especially knowing that this likely wasn't the first nor the last time that that little girl was going to hear that sexualized, body-shaming message from her mother. Two-year-olds don't have any sense of modesty, and they shouldn't at that age. They're comfortable running around naked if you let them, and they have no shame about their bodies, and they shouldn't. What story is that little girl going to grow up with about her body and about her sexuality? Whether it's beauty is the only thing that matters, body shaming and patience, or any other number of cultural or familial stories, there are stories that we tell about ourselves, stories that inform who we are, even if they aren't based in reality, even if they cause us harm. Do you have any stories like this? Are there any stories that have been told to you over and over that you now tell yourself that have held up to the light of truth, justice, and love would be shown to be false, harmful, and unworthy? What are the stories in your life that might need some closer examination? If you have any, and I imagine all of us probably have at least one, if not a few, if you have any, the good news is we aren't stuck with the stories we have. We can choose to change them, to tell different stories, and redefine who we are and how we think about ourselves. The first task, as UU Minister Reverend Victoria Safford outlined in our reading today, is to take ownership. Her words in that reading were, of course, set in the context of Yom Kippur, the conclusion of the Jewish High Holy Days, which was yesterday. And Yom Kippur is all about repentance and forgiveness, taking ownership of your sins, which are your wrong and harmful actions towards others, and asking forgiveness. This taking ownership and responsibility for actions that have caused harm and asking forgiveness, it applies to ourselves as well. Taking responsibility for our own actions and thoughts that have harmed ourselves and granting ourselves forgiveness. Yom Kippur also asks us to let go. To let go of the resentment, the anger, the hurt, the pain, and to forgive. To bring healing to the self, to others, and to the world. Seems like a perfect time to take ownership of the stories we've been told. To let go of the ones that have been harmful, and to create healing in ourselves and in the world by putting new stories in place. Stories that affirm our inherent worth and dignity. Stories that lift up goodness and hope. Stories that promote healing and wholeness. This is not easy work. Oftentimes, these stories we tell ourselves make us feel safe and comfortable, even as they hurt. We're familiar with them. They're what we know. Letting go of a story that has been our companion for years, decades, even, it can be challenging. The idea of embracing a new story, even the one that's better for us, can be scary. And above all, it can simply be hard to make the change. Another friend of mine had attention deficit disorder and remained undiagnosed until he was in his early 20s. He struggled so much in school as a kid that he just always thought he was stupid. Now he knows that to be true now, not true now, he knows it to be not true. Right? He's taken a bunch of tests, including an IQ one that show he's actually really highly intelligent. He just has a learning disability. But he can't shake that story that he lived for so long, that he was slow and stupid. His head knows better, but his heart, his body, his emotional system, they're still stuck in the past. His childhood story lingers, despite the efforts of the intellect. My own recent version of this has been around creativity. I'm not very creative, I said to our staff at our fall retreat last year, because we've been talking about ways in which we could bring more creativity to our work, and I shared that as something I considered to be a fact about myself as that part of the conversation. I'm not creative. Of course, they pushed back at me almost immediately. That's not true. You're very creative administratively. You come up with ideas in terms of doing new things with the administration that would never have occurred to us, they said. My story, though, was very strong. Sure, okay, but that doesn't count. I can't draw, I can't paint, I can't sculpt. They kept pushing, though. Is art really the only way that someone can be creative? Okay, I guess not. In my head, I understood the logic of what they were saying. My emotions, though, my body, my spirit, was still in full rebellion. It took them pointing out several specific examples before I was finally able to acknowledge that, okay, fine, maybe I'm a little bit creative in terms of how I lead the administration. Reflecting about this later, I totally get where my story of non-creativeness comes from. Growing up, I was good at math and school and following directions, and not as good at the typically creative stuff, like drawing or painting or anything like that. That was my sister. She was the free spirit, the painter, the drawer, the creative one in the family. Me, I still draw with stick figures to this day. So I can see where this story comes from, and I recognize now that I am indeed creative in other ways, and so I've worked on trying to change this story for myself since then. That little voice, though, the one that says to me, but I'm not really creative, it persists. Here's the thing, though. These false, harmful stories, they aren't just internal. They don't just exist in our individual lives. We started by talking about the harmful stories our culture tells to women about what's most valuable about them, their, your, looks and appearance. And there are so many more of those harmful stories out there. One of the most common ones is that we are a land of equal opportunity, that anyone can pull themselves up by their bootstraps if only they work hard enough. The reality, of course, is that our starting conditions dramatically impact our chances of success in life. Growing up in poverty means you are far less likely to become wealthy than those who are born in the middle class, let alone those who are born into wealth. We love in our country to lift up individual examples of those who have risen from the poorest of the poor to gain great wealth in their lives, right? There's like 30 movies that have that as the theme, and an attempt to prove that this story is true. But the individual examples actually run counter to the broader statistical reality. Income inequality and social mobility are both decreasing in our country, and little is being done to shift the tide. Or how about another American favorite, that we're the land of the free? And yet somehow in the land of the free, we incarcerate people, We put them in prison and in jail at a higher rate than any other country in the world, including all those repressive and totalitarian regimes who we claim to despise. We represent, as a country, 5% of the world's total population, and yet we house 25% of the entire global prison population. One freaking quarter of all the people in the whole world who are in prison in our country, and we're only 5% of the whole population of the world. So much for the land of the free. And that's not even getting into the completely disproportional incarceration of people of color. Talk about another myth. Does anyone remember the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic, blah, 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 blah. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, he said in school. Liberty and justice for all, unless you're a young black man. We'll take a deeper look at that story in 2 weeks on October 15th when we do our second white supremacy teach-in service. So how do we move forward? How do we start changing these stories? Paradoxically, it's as easy and as challenging as simply changing them. The story of the founding of our country is told in our history books. It's taught to us in school through a very positive whitewashed lens. We don't learn much in school about the genocide and slaughter of the native peoples who populated this land up until the arrival of the white Europeans. As but one example of the perspective of the story we hear, we talk about Christopher Columbus discovering America in 1492, but I think the Native Americans knew that they were here and knew that this place existed, right? It was only discovered from a white European perspective. From a Native American perspective, you might consider 1492 as the year the invasion began. The stories we tell matter. And so here at our own little UU church in Muncie, we changed the story at our harvest feast. Up until last year, the program for the harvest feast featured the white European version of their arrival, of the pilgrims, and their subsequent experiences in America. We literally, simply, changed the story this past year, updated it to reflect some of the perspectives and stories of the native peoples. It may have only been here for us, but it's something. And the only way the overall countrywide story is going to change is if more churches and more schools and more television programs and more people make the choice to change their story, until enough of us have changed our stories that the stories themselves change. In our own lives, the same simple yet complicated truth remains. Once we've taken ownership of our stories, the Yom Kippur call to forgive, to let go of hurt and pain, it shows us the path forward. We can do our best to let go, and then create new stories about ourselves, our lives, our country, and our world. And actually, integrating the new stories we've created can be really hard work. Changing one ritual at our church is relatively easy. Changing our country's story about the nature of its founding is complex. Naming for ourselves that we're not impatient or that we are creative is easy. Truly teaching and knowing through our whole being that that is true is harder. Another easy choice we can make in the face of this complicated challenge is to choose to bring the attitude that Grandpa Gino from our Story for All Ages today told Lucy. When you treat others with love and kindness, you're doing the right thing. To gently and regularly use your head to remind yourself the story you were telling in the moment, the story you've been telling for far too long, simply isn't true, that is a gentle, compassionate, caring thing to do for yourself. Speaking truth to power and voicing your opposition to the stories in our culture that women are valued primarily for their looks or any other number of other harmful cultural stories, that's a loving and kind thing to do. Working to bring the light to the distorted reality of the false myth that anyone, if they work hard enough, can pull themselves up by their bootstraps, or that we live in the land of the free, is a loving and compassionate thing to do. One more easy way to tackle these challenging problem stories is to show up. Show up in places, at meetings, show up with your family, at community events, show up in conversations. Show up in places where stories are being shared, and share the story you know to be true. If we only ever hear one story, we don't really know enough. We don't really have much of an opportunity to change the story we're telling if we haven't heard different ones. so you can show up and tell your version of stories and give other people the opportunity to think about something new. The stories we tell can and do shape the reality we live in, both individually and in our communities. Let us make sure that the stories we tell are worth telling and shape our lives and the lives of those around us in the way that we want them shaped. Let us treat ourselves and those around us with love and kindness, and let us change the stories bit by bit, piece by piece, until the larger story begins to unravel. Let us show up and do this work that is at the same time both simple and so, so complex. Let us begin to change the stories. We started earlier, right, by me sharing the song I made up for Mira to try and help her combat the pervasive sexism she's already encountering in our culture, even at age 3. If I walk up to Mira today and sing to her, "You are beautiful," she's heard it so many times now that she automatically chimes in with, "Powerful and strong. You are beautiful, powerful and strong." It's super cute. And I couldn't have scripted this if I'd tried. I'd forgotten that the sound, right, is piped into the nursery. And so she heard me in the sermon this morning at the first service, and the caretakers actually sent me a video of her singing the song after she heard me sing it. I hope I've helped her, at least a little bit, to change the story our culture tells her about what it means to be female in our country. I hope I have helped her, even just a little bit, to find some of the tools she'll need to fight that battle on her own, because culture is pervasive and powerful despite our best intentions to counteract it. I have faith in her that she can do it, and I have faith that all of us can do it too. Stories are powerful, and the false ones, the harmful ones, the ones that are life-taking instead of life-giving, those stories can and need to be and must be changed. We owe ourselves and the world nothing less than giving it a shot. Let's do it.